with any luck there, Dr. Mrs. Future will be in the studio, rustling and running toward a microphone sometime soon.
Yes, I have run, and here I am.
Here you are.
Yes.
Here I am to save the day. How are you?
Excellent.
What is going on in the future on the Future Show?
Well, we've got some new tools for you here and now, just released. Google introduces voice search and search by image.
Voice search and search by image. Like I can just go, Google, find me all information on rectangles, and it'll do that?
It's starting to. It's funny, the results you'll get. It's never exactly what you want, and lets you speak really simply and clearly. But it works. You know, you have to use the Chrome browser, of course. I think Firefox has a plugin for it now, too. And it'll just be right next to the search button on the Google search page.
So you just talk into it.
Yeah, you hit your mouse and you touch talk and off you go. So that's kind of interesting. That's just out this week. And the other big news is from the other camp, Apple, who just released a slew of products this morning.
What was in their slew? Any new iPhones?
No, the rumors are that's not until September, Corey. This point. But what they did release was Final Cut Pro 10. Now, if you're into videos and video editing, if you want to put up some cooler movies on YouTube than just raw footage and you want to win some editing, it looks like Final Cut Pro 10 is going to be the cat's meow.
And will that be like an Air type of, you basically upload your footage to their Air servers and just do it right there?
No, Apple's not doing that. They're actually putting it available only through the Mac App Store, so you have to download it from the cloud. And it's an unheard of cheap price for a major high-end software like that. I mean, Final Cut Pro 7 was over $1,000, and they're selling it now for $299. So it's a whole new radical strategy. The other big strategy is that they're getting rid of timelines as we know them. You know, if we edit by a timeline typically for video or audio, and they're changing that paradigm to something else. And we'll find out what that is as soon as we play with it.
Well, you have to have some numerical value, because you have to say stop at such and such and re-enter at such and such.
I know. It is kind of strange to think of trying to edit without a timeline. You know, we're so used to that.
It could just be numerical, a straight line of numbers, and you say stop at 487 and start again at 727. But at some point, you have to have some place to stop and start.
Yeah, exactly. I think my guess is that they're splitting it up into little modules, and you can combine the modules in different ways. Like if you put on some special effects on an image, it'll stay on that image wherever you move that image. Then it becomes like a complete system that you set up for how you want the footage to look.
Well, you play with it and let me know.
Yeah, I will do that. We'll do that.
So besides Apple creating something that I won't use, what else have they created?
Well, there's a new smell-o-vision that research breakthrough towards odor-generating TV. That's come out this week.
Well, I think TV stinks anyway, so that would be perfect.
I guess if you're eating a pizza and your viewer smells pizza coming from the TV or your cell phone, then, you know, that's...
I'm not sure I want to see any of those detective movies where they find those dead bodies, and I don't want to do those anymore. It's like, oh my God, that's Quincy, and you know what's going on over there in the laboratory? Don't want that.
Yeah, well, this is UCSD. They have a team working at this, and they're looking at commercially available perfumes. Like they've experimented with Live by Jennifer Lopez.
Okay. I hope they don't have porn in smell-o-vision. I don't want that.
They have Passion by Elizabeth Taylor.
Well, that's
for the more classic, love.
Well, I'm going to have to let you go because we got 3 seconds to go top of the hour. Have a great show.
Thank you. We'll talk to you soon.
Time now for What's Left and Dr. Future on AM 1080 KSCO Santa Cruz.
Welcome to the Dr. Future Show. Happy Tuesday, everyone. Agent Nodded the controls, Mrs. Future.
Hello, Santa Cruz, Monterey. Hi, hello.
You guys have a good weekend?
I had an amazing weekend.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Getting ready for the solstice?
Agent Nada, we had a solstice celebration at the beach Saturday night. It was very beautiful.
Yeah. I love the solstice tradition you guys observe. It's so beautiful.
Yes, we do a Nordic ritual where we create a giant flower wheel, and then at dusk
Don't you light it on fire or something like that?
At dusk, we light it on fire and roll it into the ocean.
The fire meets the water.
And then we'll do like a spiral dance maybe, or we'll run around. And dolphins usually come. It's very magical. It's very beautiful.
And happy this, kids.
And this is to
happy.
Commemorate the
This is to
summer.
Remind yeah. the sun god, since it was such a long day, he might have gotten a little tired out. To please come back tomorrow.
He's having a long day, huh?
He had a long day. This is a reminder to the Nordic sun god. Yeah. Please, please, don't forget us. Come back. Yeah. So we do that for him.
I would have made it, Agent Nada, except I was at Savor.
Yes, you... Tell us about this extraordinary experience that you had.
The Savor event at the Temple of Yes was really an amazing novel experience that I would highly recommend for any small group of friends.
And why is that?
Well, let me first tell you what it is. Savor is the brilliant invention of fantastic gourmet chef Angela Blessing, our friend. And she is just... wanting to share her extraordinary awareness of the subtleties of food and flavor and taste.
An exquisite cook.
She's an exquisite chef, and, you know, she worked with her friend Steve. What's Steve's last name? Steve. Well, anyway, they prepared just course after course, what's so special about Savor is that it's a formal dining experience, and everybody is at the table, and there's no silverware, and everyone has blindfolds on. And so the idea is to isolate your experience of taste so that you can really fully appreciate the subtleties in a way that you might not normally tune
into. And was that true for you? Did you really?
It was absolutely true for me. I don't think I ever experienced a shallot quite the same way.
Blindfolded.
The textures kind of combining sweet and savory or soft and hard or fruity and salty. You know, I mean, there are just so many wonderful moments.
What's that was nice is it was formalized enough so that this is what you do at the dinner table. You don't talk. You savor your food.
Right. You know? Yeah.
And they had live musicians and...
Yes. Oh, Ronnie Ray Padilla was there. He is such a wonderful musician.
It's true. He is one of the best.
It was an emotional experience because, you know, there wasn't a lot of talking except for Deborah Artura, who was sort of the she was the word guide. She was the spoken word experience facilitator.
To help you tune into the exquisiteness of the food.
Yeah, and so she would kind of subtly suggest what was happening while you were using your ears to tune in and listen. And each table had their own server, and so, you know, you would hear glasses begun to be filled up with something slurping through the glasses, you know, and first you would inhale and
smell the
take it in
glass.
And, you know, there were all these different senses that you got to explore as part of the meal.
They waft into your nostrils.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
It was a very artistic
experience. If this was done in a big city like San Francisco or New York or LA, there'd be booked for months.
Yeah, absolutely.
In advance.
Yeah, and in fact, I would encourage anybody who would like to book this incredible event to contact Angela Blessing at the Temple of Yes, because it is an extraordinary experience. Really fun.
I, Agent Nada, have had the pleasure and privilege to experience Savor. I didn't get to do this last one because I was frolicking on the beach with all of my friends, but
so many things to do.
My other friends, you all were at the Temple of Yes, and it truly is an extraordinary experience, lifelong, memorable experience, because it was so well done. When you sit down at the table, the blindfold is there in front of you, and it's the silk, very comfortable blindfold that you put on, and the idea of having to arrange your plate in a certain way and to know where your wine glass is and how the before you even get to taste the food, the picking up the food with your fingers and feeling it and remembering where the things were back at your plate and your cup and really falling in love with my chalice whenever I could hear that there's something new in the cup and go over and feel the glass. It's an incredible experience.
Yeah, and I might also add that this is not the experience of what it is to be blind necessarily either, because the blindness is a whole other thing. This is more reducing one sight so that the others can more appreciate what is.
Well, I understand from talking with Angela that the idea for this savor actually comes from New York City, where there's a restaurant.
There's one in Montreal, too.
Where the servers are blind.
Oh.
And it's served in darkness. And so it's an entirely interesting.
The actual restaurant is in darkness.
The actual servers are blind.
Oh, that's
so
interesting.
You are being, So there's a very interesting added dimension that if any of you all out there at KSCO, our lovely audience, if you want to pipe in your idea, if you've ever eaten something blindfolded, please give us a call here. 479-1080.
You want to add a dimension by taking one away.
That's right. I think that's
well, right. Heightened sensory experience is really one of the things that you like to do with art if you're a successful artist.
Right. And I think that Angela is brilliant with her abilities to get the flavors and the feel of the food together and creating this experience. I think when we did it, one of the more amazing dishes, well, all of them were, but the one was Belgian endive with some type of cheese and nut. It was really good, but to pick it up and to grasp it and the textures of everything is just.
Oh yeah, let me start off from this last one with. She started off. I almost thought we were eating the dinner backwards, like starting with dessert first, because the first morsel was so yummy, and it was a perfectly ripe, slightly tart nectarine, right? That had this amazing creamy mousse sauce on it and something crunchy. I'm not sure I remember if it was maybe pistachios or it might have been some little crunchy chocolate nib kind of thing. Just going through those textures together, from the tart and the sweet and the soft and the foamy and the crunchy. It was just so awesome.
Delightful.
Yeah.
So, a new dining experience, angelablessing.com.
Hey, and I had a pretty amazing food experience also. Friday, I went up to San Francisco and went to 3 art exhibits.
I saw you posted your dinner,
and I ate at this place called Shea Papa in San Francisco at the Mint Center, right there at 5th and Mission. These totally new chefs where they're creating foods with foam and different consistencies that are very different than
I was really studying your pictures that you posted on our website, Nada, and I was wondering what that foam was.
The foam was a creamed corn foam that had I had to lick it. I watched to make sure nobody could see me.
It was like tadpoles respawning in your dessert or something. That's state of the art.
It was a piece of fish that had been perfectly crisped and cooked, and then they put this foam of creamed corn, and then it imbued the fish. It was incredible. It was like altering. I mean, just like you guys had on Saturday night.
Oh, this was a great weekend for experience-altering food, life-altering dinners.
Happy summer, everyone.
And then my third, so I went to the De Young to see the Picasso Museum, where it was like 170 Picassos. Mm. And then I went to the SF MoMA for the Stein exhibition, the Stein collection, and there's like another 50 Picassos in that. And then there's like 100 Matisses. There's like a million. It was like, there was one point where I was like, oh, a Matisse. And then I was thinking, oh my gosh, it's a Matisse. Like what, how can you become acclimated to another Matisse?
By being
and I had to like
them,
slap myself up and get a grip. Not it's a Matisse.
Where is this done? In San Francisco?
SF MoMA.
Oh,
and then I went to the Eco-sexual art
exhibit. Oh, you did get to that.
I wondered
that's Annie
if
Sprinkle.
You were
our own Annie Sprinkle
Annie
is doing
show.
An event, uh-huh.
Good for you.
Eco-sexuality.
That's right. It was an art exhibit about eco-sexuality, and basically anybody who enjoys feeling bodily pleasure in the world, you're an eco-sexualist. Uh-huh. So like if you like love the feel of the water against your skin as you're swimming, feel pleasure from the sun raying down upon your body as you lie on the beach, you're an eco-sexual.
Mm-hmm. And if you're making love with nature,
that well,
if you love nature.
Exactly. So the idea is that we've really been treating Mama Earth, Gaia, more like an enemy, and that we need to treat her like a lover. We need to make love to the earth.
Well, love and domination do not travel in the same gestures, right?
That's really, that reminds me of Nick Herbert and how his approach to physics, there's a book that just came out on how the hippies saved physics, and he's one of the our elder hippie scientists from Stanford.
Oh, you
know, quantum physics, and he's going to talk to us about how this Esalen scientist have an impact on the world.
I wonder if we couldn't give Nick a call during the break.
Yeah, we are.
We're going to do that.
We're looking forward to talking to Nick Herbert after the break.
Yes, there's How the Hippies Saved Physics after the break.
How the Hippies Saved Physics.
Think about that.
I think the hippies have saved a lot.
Yeah.
More than just physics.
Yeah. Wasn't that a title inspired by something else?
How the Irish Saved the World, of course. Yes.
Irish and the hippies. Where would we be without them?
I don't know. The world would not be so bright.
Definitely.
Especially with all the tie-dyes being gone. Stay tuned.
It's time to celebrate. 90 years of local business. Hello, Michael Olson here, speaking up for Think Local First, County of Santa Cruz, with an invitation to join us for our Summer Mixer, Thursday 5 to 7:30, as we help our good friends at G.O.H. Wilson celebrate their 90th anniversary. See how fun 90 can be. Join us at G.O.H. Wilson's ultra-modern fabrication facility at 250 Harvey West Drive for a presentation of local business by historian Sandy Lydon. Music by Island Breeze. Drawings for prizes from local businesses, delicious foods and libations, and as always, lots of meeting and mixing with your friends and neighbors from the locally owned business community of Santa Cruz County. 90 is a great reason to celebrate, and as member of the locally owned business community, you are invited to celebrate with Think Local First at GOH Wilson, Thursday, 5 to 7:30, 250 Harvey West in Santa Cruz. And hey, on the way to your 90th, please remember to think local first.
I'm sure you've heard this.
Flowerpowerdrink.com.
Now, here's a new idea. 1 cup ice, 1 cup water into a blender, 2 scoops of vanilla whey powder, 1 packet of Polyburst natural energy drink.
Flowerpowerdrink.com.
Blend till smooth. Just like an orange creamsicle. Take you back to the good old days. Enjoy.
Flowerpowerdrink.com.
My name is Dale Pazinski, and this is how I live United. I volunteer with United Way, helping the homeless in my community by teaching computer skills and helping them build a basic resume to save on their very own USB drive. It's huge when somebody says, "Hey man, that job that you helped me apply for, I got it." My name is Dale Pazinski. I help people achieve financial independence. So I don't just wear the shirt, I live it.
Give, advocate, volunteer, live united. Go to liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Can't sleep at night because of your home? Loan modifications? Tired of fighting the banks? Buying or selling? What is my house really worth in this new economy? It's You Can Take My House But Not My Life Radio. Join us Tuesday night, 7-8 p.m. for Real Estate 911 with hosts Kurt and Melanie Uselinger on 1080 KSCO.
You may find yourself in a beautiful house with a beautiful wife, and you may ask yourself,
this segment brought to you by User-Friendly Computing for all your computer service needs. Give them a call today at 423-9653 or stop on by the shop at 505 River Street in Santa Cruz. And be sure to ask Peter for your free $50 diagnostic coupon.
Okay, we're back to the Dr. Future Show. We'll be bringing Nick in a few minutes. He's out and about right now, but we hope to hear from him soon. Meanwhile, I want to cover some other big news that's hitting. Apple today, for example, released a ton of products.
Oh, yeah. Big day at Apple computers.
What did they release?
Well, one of the big things was the what's called Final Cut Pro 10. Now, I don't know how many of you folks are out there try to edit your YouTube movies or the movies that you're shooting, but typically, you might have used iMovie or possibly one of the freebie ones that come with your camera. They're all kind of somewhat limited compared to what's just been released. What's just coming out right now is like a super high-end system that you could edit Hollywood movies on, but really easy to use, or so they say.
And how much does it cost, Dr. Future?
And instead of costing what, like, Final Cut Pro 7 cost, or Premiere...
Which was what, $1,200? How much was it?
Yeah, $1,200.
Yeah.
Instead of costing like that,
it's that's finding the deals. It's about $1,400 if you don't find it discounted some way.
Yeah, Apple's decided to throw it out there to the world for $299.
Oh, yeah.
That actually makes it almost considerable.
And if you get those 20% off iTunes cards... you know,
oh, yeah.
That you can get on over the net. You can save another 20%.
2 weeks ago, Target was having a 20% off gift card sale.
Tip of the hat to Kunga for that.
Yeah.
He always knows how to save money.
That's right. Futuremedia.com, a little shout out, keeping us on par. No, so we know what's going on with Apple stuff. Good job.
So the Final Cut Pro 10 is intriguing because it was built from the ground up, and it apparently doesn't use timelines. Or so I've heard. And
yeah, I was listening to your little exchange with Corey Gold earlier, Dr. Future, and I thought you were getting in the right direction because I have had experience with non-timeline editing, particularly with iMovie.
Yeah, I think iMovie is a non-timeline thing. You don't like it, right?
That was the latest iMovie. iMovie was not timeline-less until... I'd say about 2 years ago, in 2008.
Well, for those of you who are unfamiliar with editing, typically you have a line of information going from left to right, kind of like letters across the page or frames in a screen of movie. And you basically can edit your frames of the movie over a timeline from left to right. And so everyone's thought about that as the way to do things.
And it tells you how long the time is, so you know how big of a piece, how long you're, you know, if you need to do 10 minutes, you kind of can, you know, lay something down for 10 minutes, like a piece of soundtrack or something, and you know that's what you're cutting to.
Exactly.
But with non-linear timelines, it's a whole different way, and it's, like you were saying, modularized. And so really, you're creating the movie through clips.
Mm-hmm. You take a clip and have some fun with it, change the color, the contrast, the balance, and that. And that clip holds all that change and becomes a new clip.
That's right. That's right.
So you're combining modules instead of pieces of timeline.
But you don't want to, I think, I mean... We can go on and on about
it. Yeah, it's a little nerdy for the audience.
I think what we should do is try it and give it a review. Because if it's anything like iMovie, we might hate it because it's really clunky. But maybe it's a new paradigm. Maybe it's something we haven't seen yet. Mm-hmm. You know?
And there are new kinds of films coming out that may lend itself to this. Like, for example, I put up on the website the new media 360-degree movie of the Vancouver riots.
And what is your website, Dr. Future?
www.drfutureshow.com. DR Future Show.
And you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter.
That's right.
And check out the links. We don't hardly have any time to cover all the amazing stories that
yes,
we're
Dr.
pulling
Future,
in every week. And so go to the links.
The most amazing stories.
And, you know, I think these links are just going to get more interesting with time. So if you're not listening to us live and you're just listening to the podcast, be sure and go to drfutureshow.com to the links page, because I'll tell you, these links stand the test of time. They are such an interesting perspective on what human beings are cooking up for the future. Really
interesting. In this case, this is a new film that is 360 degrees. Remember the World's Fair, or I think Disneyland, I think, used to have a 360-degree theater where you'd stand in the center and you'd look and you'd see the movie all around you.
For some reason, I associate that with Kraft cheese.
No, they have bars. You have to hang on to the bar because it makes you feel like you're going to fall over.
Yeah,
right.
So
you remember that?
Oh, yeah,
uh-huh.
I do.
You have to stand there.
It's kind of like a horizontal vertigo.
And you'd go through America the Beautiful and you'd go all over America.
Gorgeous scenery. Remember driving through cornfields and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah. Well, the modern-day version of that is much smaller, of course, and easier to play with. And you can play on your computer screen where you can tilt and zoom the angle at any moment. Like if you see something in the corner of a crowd, you can go there, and you can keep your eye on that as you pass it by, you know, things like that.
I'm really interested in how they solve the problem for 360-degree capture. Mm-hmm. You have to be on one point of pivot. Otherwise, it distorts the entire thing. Like if, let's say, your camera jumps out 4 inches.
Well, there is some distortion. When you walk out, there is some distortion, and it's not
perfect.
There's
distortion on the edges, but what I'm talking about is actually capturing it all the way to the point of visualization, where you start seeing the image.
Mm-hmm.
And anyways, it's something I have thought about, and it was a problem. It still is a problem, and I wonder how they
Let me just see if I can decode what I think you're saying. So you're talking about how when you do a surround, a 360-degree capture like that, you have to realize that there's only one center, and the radius from that center is very inflexible. And if you move just a little bit away from that center, then you get some distortion picture. And so how do they tie together images from different centers, right?
Well, I think they have to use one center.
Well, I think the way that Google handled that problem in their Street View, I thought, was a very interesting solution to that problem. Because what they did is they basically have bubbles that are dots that you point to, and you go to that dot, so you get the 360 from that place.
Oh, for the uninitiated.
And then you can go to the next dot and get the 360 from that place where you can see the last one.
But for the uninitiated, the Street View is on Google Maps, and you go into Google Maps, and you'll see these icons of little cameras all over the map. And if you click on one of those cameras, you can get into the Street View mode, which is from one of the Google cars that cruise up and down your neighborhood.
And so you can see in 360 degrees, and you have arrows that take you around.
Right.
And so you can see the building that you're looking for and actually get a visualization of where, if it's an unknown house.
Actually see where you are.
Yeah, actually see where you're going.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, it seems
and
to be very related to that.
A lot of places around the world have it now. Yeah. There are some countries that won't let it.
Street View.
Street View, yeah.
You are not allowed to photograph my house.
Yeah, it's in Germany, actually, where you're not allowed to have Street View.
It's an intriguing thing, because I'm thinking...
not private enough, huh?
I'm thinking, Agent Nada, with your new interest and focus on that, your new show on Gamers on Games. Agent Nada's doing a show on her own, on Gamers on Games.
Thank
on
you,
Monday afternoons at the university station.
Monday at 12:30, yeah.
Yeah. And have you seen anybody to try to use these new Google features like Street View in a game yet?
Well, games have been using 360-degree perspective.
But you can, where in the world is so-and-so? You know, you could play games with Street View.
I haven't seen any yet.
Okay.
There is an enormous virtual world society where people have been building in SketchUp, which is another free Google three-dimension animation program that is really fun. It's called SketchUp. Like I said, it's free.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that.
I don't think SketchUp is free anymore. It was free originally, but I don't think it's been free for the last year and a half.
Well, I don't know. I think there might be paid versions of it, but I think there's a lot of freebie stuff for SketchUp.
Yeah. So SketchUp...
It allows you to do 3D objects on virtual, on the maps or in Google Earth.
Right. And so they, people have been creating buildings all over the world, like the Notre Dame in Paris or any really large landmarks.
Or the pyramid downtown San Francisco.
That's right. And so they're building
3D these buildings. Yeah.
They're building them in SketchUp, and then they're overlapping them in virtual in Google Maps.
And Google Earth.
And Google Earth. And so you can go into these and you can take them. You can copy them. And so then you go into something like Second Life, where it's a virtual reality, and you can build your own Notre Dame.
Second Life, for the uninitiated, is a three-dimensional virtual world that you can access via your laptop.
Yes, and you create your avatar. It's not perfectly personalized yet, but you can choose, you know, what they're wearing, what color skin they have, what color hair.
And there are several thousand people that basically, you know, hang out there.
I'd say probably in the tens of thousands, really. It's been a long-running program for Linden Labs.
It's been around for many years, 5-6 years, I'd say, more.
And
I have a T-shirt that says, we'll work for Linden Dollars, which is the internal currency for that world.
Well, I have a friend who's here in the area who makes machinimas in Second Life.
Nice. Actually making movies. You can have whole backyard lots of all kinds of...
Yeah, you can build whatever you want.
And Roman set, Greek set.
That's right.
And explain machinima for people who aren't familiar with
the
term.
So machinimas are like making movies... So it's cinemas would be the word with a machine cinema. And you are creating the content for a movie in virtual reality. Mm-hmm. So you are creating the set, you are getting the actors and writing the script, and you are making the movie basically for free.
Right, using sort of a virtual world where there are some virtual characters you can choose from, or you can make some of your own.
Or you ask friends to do it.
Right.
And there's water, and there's ocean sounds, and there's wind sounds, and there's babbling. You can make a waterfall, so you can make a babbling waterfall.
It's the cheapest way to have a set to make a movie.
Exactly, exactly. Mm-hmm. And so he's been creating movies in Second Life for many years now. Mm-hmm. And there's a huge amount of activism in Second Life. Mm-hmm. And I could go on and on.
Yeah, and as long as the resolution gets bigger and better, and it'll become more photorealistic at a certain point, machinima movies will be as good as Hollywood movies.
Yeah, and you don't have to type. You can talk in Second
cost
World.
Next to nothing to make. You can edit them on new Final Cut Pro 10, and off you go.
That's right.
You know, so it's rapidly going to change and move, I think, move the entertainment industry to wherever people learn the skill sets to wield these tools.
That's right.
You know, so watch the machinima artists. They're going to be the front end of the future for cinematic expression.
A lot of other news, too, Dr. Future.
I know. It's.
What are we going to talk about next?
Okay, well, one of the things that, one of the breaking news things that hit was a Libyan event. It happened in Libya where apparently the Gaddafi's men saw this thing darting in and out between the buildings, hovering, and they shot it with, I think, probably an RPG, and it turned out to be...
They shot it down, huh?
They shot it down, yeah.
They shot the hummingbird down.
It was like a hummingbird airplane of some sort, and they looked at it, and they thought it was, you know, it was a jetter, but it was much smaller, and it turned out to be a drone, but not just any predator type drone, but a helicopter drone.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. And see all those radio controlled activists out there? And you have a future in military hummingbirds.
And so how big of this? How big was the?
Well, the drone copter is pretty big. It's like as big as a car.
So, like my Volkswagen?
Yeah, like your Volkswagen. And
my Beetle.
they thought it was an Apache gunship. I mean, it's pretty big, but it's much smaller. It turned out to be what's called an MQ-8 Fire Scout, or vertical takeoff unmanned aerial vehicle built by Northrop Grumman. And the Air Force apparently has been using them, but this wasn't a drone copter from the Air Force. This was seemed to be something from the Navy. Apparently, U.S. Special Operations uses a similar thing called a Hummingbird Robocopter. So there are a couple models of that's by Boeing.
It's coming true.
The Navy wants to buy about 200 of them, and they're just using a handful right now. They cost about $10 million each. They're 24 feet long. I guess they're a little bit bigger than a car. They're like an RV, I guess. Pilotless choppers. So
they're sad, huh?
So how big was this thing that was shot
they lost
out of the
it,
sky?
Right?
24 feet long.
So Gaddafi's got it now?
Yeah, they've got
the
wreck.
You think he put it in his living room?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sure he's doing some creative things with it.
Yeah. The Navy also sent
three. I didn't want to think about it.
Apparently, the Navy sent three of them to northern Afghanistan in the mountainous regions. Apparently, they used them in a drug bust off of Latin America last year. So they're starting to find some uses for them.
Hmm. Well, you know, it really seems like Skynet is going sentient and the military is really roboting up, right? Really getting into remote control, mechanical devices that the human beings involved can be in a little safe room far away, issuing orders. As long as it's in the hands of the good sides, rah, rah. But it really, I think, is becoming more important than ever that we get world peace down as a human society.
Question, can I get a link for the drone copter? Go to wired.com. You'll see it on the front page. That's one of the top stories of Wired right now. That's from Carl in cow country out there in Wisconsin. Right, Carl? Yeah, right. Okay, well.
What are we going to talk about after the break, Dr. Future?
Well, there's some big breakthroughs in swarm bots that...
I was hoping we'd get to the swarm
bots. Yeah, swarm bots are a big topic.
You know, when you brought up the story about the hummingbird, I really thought of it being a little tiny thing.
Yeah. Well, that's happening, too.
Yeah.
See, the very small ones are next.
You're back.
Okay, I'm back. Welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. We had a hacker story in the news. You might have seen it in the popular news. It was called A Hacktivist Group Seeks Satisfaction. There's been a rapid ascension of a hacker group called LulzSec, LulzSec, that sort of signals a revival of cyber attacks that have been out there to mostly humiliate companies and government agencies. Apparently, they disrupted the U.S. Senate's website last week. They knocked out the CIA's website. They issued a press release declaring via Twitter, it says, "This is the Internet, where we screw each other over for a jolt of satisfaction." Mm. And mainstream media is pointing out that this is no idle rant. They apparently are a splintered group from a hacktivist group called Anonymous, and who that group has successfully hacked the Sony issue you may have heard about in the news, as well as the FBI, Fox, PBS, Nintendo's, etc. So LulzSec says they're not seeking criminal profit for participating in any cyber espionage. They say they, quote, "We do things just because we find it entertaining."
Could you give me a link to that, Dr. Future? I'd really like to put that out on our Twitter
feed.
Well,
it's in the USA Today, right?
Yeah, this big article in USA Today. It's in our link section. It issues bombastic press releases of all kinds, and they have animated videos, and they use a mustachioed cartoon character as a logo.
I see it. Hacktivist group seeks satisfaction.
Yes. Yeah, so if you go to their website, it's Lulz Security, LULZ Security.
And Dr. Future, you checked to see if your name was on the list?
I did. See, that's one of the things I would release to you. Go to their homepage. They have the picture of the Lulz boat, and they have a song. It's supposed to be sung to the love boat. Lulz, exciting and new, come aboard, we're expecting you. Lulz, life's sweetest reward, let it flow, it floats back to you. The Lulz boat, soon we'll be making another run.
You don't know the song
the
for the love boat,
promises
Dr.
something.
Future.
True, you should do it.
The love boat,
the Lulz boat. Do, 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 do.
Okay, keep going.
keep going.
Lulz won't hurt anyone. It's an open smile on a friendly shore. Welcome aboard. It's Lulz. If you reach that page, you go down to their releases, and you can see some of the lists of names that they have uncovered, and you can search down there in those lists to see if your name is in there.
So you checked in all these lists, Dr. Future?
Well, I didn't look in the Senate Governor internal data list or the Bethesda internal, because I know I don't have anything there. I look at the ones where I'm more likely to have my name and password, you know, published. You know, I'll look in there to see if they hacked me in some way. So if you're worried about you're being hacked, at least you can check the list there to see if you're in them.
Mm.
Yeah. So that's
scary.
Scary, but useful, right? And, oh, by the way, I would probably go into their site. I would go in a new incognito window or undercover.
How's that?
There's modes in your browser where you can go incognito. It's a choice in the browser. In Chrome, it's on the right-hand side.
Oh, my God. Now I'm scared. I went there.
Well, it's not. It's KSCO's computer now. Just kidding.
It's good to be reminded that you should be careful wherever you go and that. Don't hit the execute download button.
Yeah, no, don't download an actual program. That would be like a .exe or a .dmg. You don't want to launch a real program on your computer. But they do have lists. So that's another interesting story that I want to point out. The other thing is that the swarm bots, we mentioned that there are a new class of robots that are coming out. They're very small ones. There's one class called kilobots. They're fairly simple little robots, about the size of a quarter. And they can move around on little vibrating legs, and they can blink their lights, and they communicate with each other. And on an individual basis, they're pretty simple. They're like little cells. They're not designed to be used as little individuals. Like cells, they're designed to be used in mass. They cost about $14 each. They're buildable in about 5 minutes. And you would get, you know, maybe at least 10 or 100. But they're designed to swarm in the thousands. And that's where they're going. And now, Harvard University's self-organizing systems research group is working with them.
So, Dr. Future.
Yeah.
What are all these little tiny, like,
quarter-sized robots?
Swarms of robots. What are they going to do? They can't do my dishes, right? I mean...
Yeah, they are kind of like scrubbing bubbles.
They are.
Well, they're about cooperating, Agent Nada. They're about cooperation, an amazing concept.
And what are they doing?
As opposed to competition.
Well, right now they're teaching their programmers what swarm behavior looks like. What happens when a whole bunch of individuals are given the same code and then they each execute on their own time, in their own way.
So they're flying.
These are vibrating. These particular ones have three legs, and they walk by vibrating. And they can turn around in a circle, or they can move forward. That's all they can do.
They can synchronize with each other. You can program them all at once with an infrared programming beam, so they can all get the same program simultaneously. They can be made to collect things. They could be made to pass messages from one to the other. They can surround something and give you multiple points of view on one thing. They could be equipped with all kinds of sensors that give you information about where they're swarming.
So they're watching the swarm of these tiny little critters to see what emerges.
Yes. Right?
What kind of behavior emerges.
That's a whole other class of research. That's self-organizing systems. That's where if you put swarms together, new things just appear without being programmed.
Right.
Yes, you can do that, but you can also program to do things. Like an army is a swarm.
Right.
Right.
And so you can collect data with these guys.
They can collect data. You can initiate them to do different behaviors, too.
Let me just take you on a sort of related link of what kinds of things they're doing with swarms, because there are sort of some swarm games where there are little self-organizing robots that are programmed to find their robot food and turn on a blue light when they find it.
right? And in generations of experiments with these little robots, some of the robots have actually learned the behavior of lying about the location of the food so that they can mislead the other robots. There are two classes of lying. One is where they find the food and they don't turn on their blue light, so they, you know, don't let on that they know. And then the other class is where they go away from the food and turn on the blue light when they get away from the food so that they take all the other robots astray. And so what these swarm behavior studies have shown is very much like what happens with animals, that whatever strategy is most rewarding to the goal is the strategy that is learned by these self-organizing robots. So that's the kind of thing that they do with these swarms.
This is starting to sound like artificial life.
It's beginning to evolve. Swarms are a key to creating this new intelligence, this AI intelligence that's beginning to emerge.
Skynet.
Collective intelligence is also something that our species begin to explore more as well as our communications with each other improves, both with the technology and with emotional literacy. We're actually able to communicate more deeply with each other.
Oh, yeah. I would really like to encourage all of you swarm programmers out there to please program some emotional literacy. I know that might be a stretch, but it's going to be really important when the robots learn behavior on their own, and then they need to have a little bit of compassionate, loving respect for their creators, because there will probably be more of them than there are of us.
That goes way back to Asimov's three laws of robotics. Remember those? Basically, you're teaching a robot not to hurt a human being.
That should be the number one rule. First thing taught.
Yeah, that's right.
First piece of programming.
That's right. Asimov's three laws of robotics.
And what's the second one, Doctor?
Don't put me on the spot here, will you? Hold on. Let me get the Google going here. It's been a long time since I was
I would say
kid,
that's a very important one, which they did Asimov's. Do with the Cylons in Battlestar Galactica.
Well, they didn't do it in our military either. Nobody's made robots not hurt people.
In fact, what they did with the Cylons in Battlestar Galactica is torture them for their secrets.
Oh, here we go. All right, here you go. Wikipedia. One, a robot may not injure a human being or through inaction allow a human being to come to harm. Two, a robot must obey any orders given to it by human beings, except where such orders would conflict with the first law. And law three, a robot must protect its own existence as long as such protection does not conflict with the first or the second law.
Now, you know, I'm not sure if that is still the way that people are programming robots.
No, I'm sure it's not.
Because
that was
the idea that humans are more important than robots is something I'm sure that self-aware robots are going to question as soon as they have the ability to do so.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you brought up Dr. Future. You brought up Asimov. He was at Esalen. There's a room that's
Asimov,
named,
really?
That's named in
Isaac
his honor.
Asimov?
Yes.
At Esalen?
Yes.
Wow. Well, that kind of ties into the story of the quantum physicist.
Oh, yeah?
Even though we haven't been able to reach Nick, he's in some parallel cosmic reality of some sort.
He's
okay.
Entangled somewhere,
we
but it's
yeah.
not
well,
about our show
I just
today.
Mentioned it anyway because we have an interesting link. Basically, what happened in the 60s in San Francisco, 60s and 70s, was pretty profound in terms of the cultural revolution of sex, drugs, religion, and science. And science was impacted as well.
I thought you were going to say rock and roll.
So, well, that too. That too. I think these are the scientists that appreciated the musicians.
Mm-hmm.
And Esalen was a place where there was a lot of free thinking allowed in terms of understanding science. And it's where people began to use their understanding of science to look at the nature of human consciousness itself. And there were a number of scientists, especially physicists, that were interested in seeing how their insights into the fundamental nature of reality could explain consciousness. A book that came out on that is called How the Hippies Saved Physics, not Civilization. It was based on the name of the book, How the Irish Saved Civilization.
So How the Hippies Saved Physics, Science, right. Counterculture, and the Quantum Revival.
It's a new book out, and I put a fairly critical review from the New York Times about the book in there so that you see both sides of the coin on this, how these fringe scientists weren't necessarily taken seriously by everybody. the main point of this was that there are new insights and ideas that came out that are fundamentally changing the way our civilization runs. One of the main things was a field now called quantum encryption. Quantum encryption is a whole new way of using quantum physics in creating encryption schemes that are far beyond any existing encryption technologies. And this apparently is one of the benefits that came out of the experiments at Esalen in the 70s. And this book
explores the
characters.
What is it about those hot tubs that makes people think so differently?
I don't know. Esalen is magic land. There is some deep, deep juju there.
You think magically?
I think so. I truly believe that the Esalen Indians had that. That was sacred ground, mm-hmm. where they have the hot springs. They're right on the cliff, and it's a beautiful place.
So it would lend to ideas like the Dancing Wu Li Masters or the Tao of Physics, the fundamental ideas.
Well, I'll tell you, we were very entertained yesterday by Nick Herbert, who is one of these Esalen physicists who's mentioned in the article and in the book. And he was telling us all kinds of stories about how these physicists were college roommates of each other and how they would sort of pick up each other's stories. And Gary Zukav, who's not a physicist, but who is a very profound transcendental thinker, who's roommates with Jack Sarfati, who is kind of a by-the-book, boring, stuffy scientist physicist. So you've got this wonderful book coming out of their conversation as college roommates, right?
Yeah, I think that was the key, is the combination of different people with very different mindsets coming together in a conducive environment like Esalen for thinking, free thinking about the nature of reality. I think it's worth checking out. I just downloaded it onto my Kindle to read it. I'll give you a report later after I have a chance to delve more deeply. From who I've met in this group already, it's quite interesting. And it is an area that does play with the boundaries of what's real and what's like snake oil. You're dealing with a lot of new age ideas that have some fundamental reality to them. At the same time, they also have their fluffiness.
Yeah.
So knowing what's right for you, I think, is really the key.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any absolute reality is one of the things we all actually think about it. We all are kind of creating our own little bubbles of what we think is real.
Well, it's a very profound thing to poke at, and I don't think in this hour that we have really enough time to go there. So let's start thinking about the next hour.
Probably not.
Dr. Future, what are we looking forward to in the next hour?
Well, we have a very special guest in the studio, Frankie Lee Slater.
Okay.
Yes. Who is, I guess, is a self-described networking gypsy who connects circles of influence, traveling between different... She doesn't really live in a house, per se, but she travels around from one circle of influence to another and connects them with each other as part of her new lifestyle. And we're going to see how she does this and what kind of information is being transferred.
She has a great website called The Art of Living that I think...
Artofliving.com.
So interesting to check out this fascinating person.
Future Lifestyles. That is another form of the communications grid. It's the human network. And Frankie represents not so much the technology as the person-to-person meet space that's so important in making reality real.
Yeah. The future is going to be full of profound people with great memories and great insights as we navigate a more and more complex world. So, after the break. It's been great on Dr. Future Show, KSCO Santa Cruz.
Radio. Up next, hour number two of the Dr. Future Show.
Welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. For our second hour today, we offer you someone living a very different lifestyle than what you perhaps are familiar with. A lifestyle in which our guest, Frankie Lee Slater, has evolved, who considers herself an artist of living, the art of living. Not just painting or music, but living itself, that living itself can be a form of art. And her latest form of living involves a gypsy lifestyle. Is that right, Frankie? Or would you call yourself a...
Well, I'm calling my travels a gypsy road.
Hold on a second. I think we're not quite getting your volume up here.
We're not hearing you there, my dear. Let's see what's going on with that.
Anyway, she did have a house when I remember you last about 10 years ago. Let's see. I think you were in Santa Monica and then Venice.
Most recently, I was.
There you go.
In Venice.
I hear you now.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think Venice.
But I do live in houses that you sound a little bit like I might live under bridges.
Well,
or something.
No. Okay. That's what we're here to do. We want to really understand what's going on here, because most people are deathly afraid of losing their house or being out on the street or not having a place, and it's one of the primal fears of our culture, I think.
Yeah, to get patterned into things for quote security unquote security when it's not actually necessarily that at all.
Yeah. So what's inspired you? You had a house, and then what did you decide to tell?
Well, I've actually lived with a whole lot of people at different times in my life, you know, starting with like Girl Scout trips when I was 10 or something. I mean, it's like I've had a lot of communal living experiences, and going abroad with my college experience, a semester where we lived and worked in the community. So I have some muscles that are well exercised over a long period of time. But this particular journey is sort of the next sector of something that I did in 2004, where I lived in 60 homes in 5 countries. Now I'm going throughout California. But the notion is to really be the connectivity, to live with people really deeply. I mean, we know when we go someplace and we stay with people who live there, we have a very different perspective than if we're just like on vacation, traveling. We stay in the hotel and we see things from the outside. This is more inside.
Really? So it's not just house sitting or anything like that. You're actually
living with whoever it is. I'm coming to your home tonight, baby.
Coming to the Frankie Scrutiny here.
But it's about being part of the household, too, yeah, for sure. And I feel that we're all cultural diplomats in a way for our own personal worldviews. And it's really important to be able to enter somebody's world and also to invite them into our own world so that we can get each other's perspective and where we're coming from.
Well, that's kind of what we do with our friends to some extent. We have friends so that we can have slightly different perspectives than our own.
Yeah,
our family's,
it's certainly the value, and right? It would have been the what we had in the past in an extended family or a tribal situation that we kind of broke away from when we went nuclear family and nuclear age.
So this is kind of a response or the next step,
like
of
a reweaving of the humanism back into it.
I think a lot of sociologists are pointing out that the nuclear family lifestyle and everyone living in their own separate boxes was not something our species did most of the time. Most of the time we lived in a more of a tribal environment, and it's only been in the last couple thousand years that we've evolved away from that.
Yeah, and really just a couple of generations where this popular mom, dad, and the kids thing is all there
really
is.
Really, it's only a couple generations.
But because we were born into it, we assume that, you know, this is the way, and there's some great thing about it. Like, look at how many single mothers are raising their kids, and then they think, oh, it's so great, you know, my own place. But is it, if you're trucking your kids along and you have to be responsible for everything? What if you had co-parenting and you switched off and you did that in the neighborhood? In fact, I stayed with some people that were doing a great job of that in Santa Barbara, where they had a summer camp for their middle school kids, and it was something that just naturally grew out of their particular community and how involved they were with the kids' lives, but not like all the time. They could take turns with one another. So it's looking at that. It's really finding what works for anyone. And I've lived in many different, I've lived so far in 20 places since April 4th when I went on the road.
Now, I'd like to ask you, Frankie Lee.
Yes, Miss Sun.
What role does using the internet play? One of our friendship over the years has always been where we really appreciate each other's artistry, but also love of the media, love of all of these technical tools for connecting with people and for letting people know who we are through our websites and things like that.
Yeah.
So how are you relating to all of that now?
Well, there's a whole bunch of different things that we're looking at. I mean, we have our own websites, and I think it gives a flavor for what's possible. I documented a lot of the events that we produced over the years, and we've got a big library that demonstrates co-creating. So that was actually community-wide. What we were modeling was coming together at the next level and really co-creating. But I think that the next place for that is in our lives out in the world.
What kind of things do you see us co-creating?
Oh, man, I don't think we've even come close to what we can co-create. But basically, everything that we perceive to be a problem on the planet I feel when we move to this co-place together and really get it as the consistency, we can solve it in the moment.
I think like we could deal with some of the big issues.
Water.
Can we co-create clean water for our community?
Totally. It's just a matter that everybody's still oriented to. We were conditioned into freedom is independence and self-expression and all of that. So everybody's trying to be the one and they're going to do it themselves and stuff. So there's a lot of these kind of people.
Little egos getting in the way of the collective.
And it's just an orientation. Uh-huh. It's an orientation that we've had. So we have to now exercise some new muscles. And it's a wonderful opportunity because think how many times you hear people talk about how they're overwhelmed or they're busy. I mean, these words just like blah out of everybody's mouth. And what I came to, and this definitely is something that I know is original because I share it with people all the time, and when they get it, it's like, are we overwhelmed because we're doing too much? Or are we overwhelmed because we're doing too much of the stuff that's not ours to do? And it's an important distinction.
Well, I think people are busy with things they feel that has to be done. You know, you have to pick the kids up, you have to drop them off, you have to pay the bills, you have to work to bring in the money.
But that's kind of a me, small we conversation. Like, yeah.
And that ends up taking up most of your time, those things, pretty much, unless you carve out the time as an artist for yourself, right?
Well, definitely, when I came to this notion of being an artist of life, it was to give people, like, a consistent access to their essential selves is creative. I feel like we are creating all the time. It's a matter of are we doing it consciously or not. Art, in its most basic definition, is skill and awareness. So are you going to create on automatic out of your patterns and habits, or are you going to create out of conscious awareness and then moving to what I call the co? Like, if I could operate in my gifts, the things that come naturally to me that I love, and you were to be able to, and Sun was to be able to, and that's how we lived our lives in our unique flow, but also together with the people that bring the compliments. But we'd have to actually exercise muscles to get beyond the life is hard and
the
rewarding effort,
yeah,
and all that stuff.
I have a slightly sort of a mirror perspective of this, because besides feeling like people are overwhelmed and the idea maybe they're doing things that aren't really theirs to do, I think that there's a tremendous lack of receiving the gifts that people put out there. Like, every musician that I know really struggles to make it in this world, because building an audience isn't so much about just their art and producing their music. It's really turned into that it has to be this kind of mercantile business. And
right,
if they're not particularly business people, then what they're here to do, which is experience their lives deeply and write music and perform music and give people an emotional experience, is so poorly valued that they end up doing something else with their time. So receiving of the gifts is something that I think is a big part of the problem with people being able to give their gifts. The gifts being given and never received means that those people decide to stop giving those gifts because they don't really address the rest of their life.
Yeah. Well, there's a kind of a whole lot of shifting that needs to take place. You know,
appreciation comes to mind there, too.
Yeah.
That by truly appreciating someone, then that person feels like their gift has been received and they're likely to give some more.
Yeah, well, I think if the gifts are received, then that takes away a lot of these dynamics such as rivalry and competition, where people feel like there's not enough attention to share, where you have to be the first and the brightest and the best, because if you're not, then no one's going to notice you.
Mm-hmm.
And that is really a problem of there not being a legitimate priority of what people's gifts actually are, and
right,
forcing people to distort themselves to fit into some exterior set of priorities that they don't necessarily fit.
Well, I've pretty much come to that we need to, like, kind of front burner the dynamics of perception to understand where we get got in terms of we're being run by ideas and beliefs and things that we're not even aware of, and how it impacts us and our relationships with one another. So the notion of even having gifts is foreign to a lot of people, that they weren't raised to have a sense that who they are matters, or that what comes naturally to them is valuable. So just even getting to that is pretty much where I start, like when I coach people or do consulting even in groups, is to be able to have people have that sense first and foremost, and then to be able to discern, well, what's the stuff that I got really good at, but it actually takes a lot of effort and I don't like it that much, from the stuff that really brings me joy that I naturally contribute and have my whole life.
I see. So you sort of parcel out what you love versus maybe survival skills or what you've mastered.
Yeah, you could be like
through.
A really good student or something, you know, and you got really good at it because you wanted to be somebody or it was expected of you, you know, and then that shows up in how your work life is playing out. But is it really something that's your soul's path? Or is it something that somebody, you got a message out in the world and then you started to take it on? So these are the kind of things that I've been able to distinguish over the years because I've done so much co-creating with people and so much living up close with people. Mm. See what engenders this expansive self-expression, but with an awareness to who we're with what gets in the way.
Okay, well, after the break, I'd like to hear about some of the co-creations you've created.
I would love to share that with you. I'm
and where we go here. Next, what kind of connections are coming from this road trip that are fresh?
Great.
Okay,
on the Dr. Future Show, KSCO, be sure and call us if you have comments, 479-1080, KSCO, Santa Cruz.
Okay, welcome back. Welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. Frankie, I'm really interested in how this kind of collaborative, co-creative process that you're talking about can actually be applied from our normal lives. What kind of co-creations are you talking about? What have you done that you're really proud of so far on this?
Well, there's a combination of things to answer that question. I mean, basically, it applies absolutely everywhere. If we had any idea how extremely conditioned we are to try to do stuff on our own.
To not be co-creative, to be
individuals. To not be co-creative. I mean, our educational system is all about,
you know. Be competitive more than cooperative.
Literally. Like, I remember in high school, I had this idea in chemistry class where, you know, I thought, gosh, I should really partner up with this gal who's like a brainiac for lab. But I remember feeling like kind of covert about it or something because the message is you're supposed to be able to do it all yourself. And we have so much of that ingrained in us, it's startling when you really look at it. So what I'm basically saying is if you're feeling overwhelmed, it's probably because you're doing stuff that you were conditioned to take on that isn't really natural for you. And yeah, you can learn stuff, but you're not supposed to be able to be good at everything. So if you want to create a project, you want to bring something alive in your life, and you try to do that all by yourself, it's going to be strung out in linear time.
How do you find the right people to work with?
I work with a couple of different systems that help a lot. One's called Wealth Dynamics. It allows you to get what your profile is, and then also from there to look at what other people could bring. So you could create teams utilizing tools like that. That's a way to go. You can get that on my website, artofliving.com. But basically, it's in some ways, it's about exercising a muscle to not push through an effort and to look instead to whom does this come easily and to recognize that we really are conditioned. And that's why I said human perceptions has to be front burner because we have to actually be able to intercede in our automatic behavior. I did some consulting for a group of women who wanted to do something in Africa, contribute to women in Africa.
Solve a medical issue?
Well, they felt like they could make a difference. Yeah. Two of them came from Africa, one from Kenya, one from Malawi. Uh-huh. And they all knew each other and they really enjoyed connecting and getting together. But as soon as they came together, they started to go into kind of an institutional mindset of like, oh, we've got to get a building and we've got to get a business plan before they actually recognized what it was that brought them together. So there's a...
I mean, the desire to help some fellow Africans.
Well, it's not so general as that. It's specific. When we're brought together, there's something natural that's there, but that's the world of being that I'm talking to, and it's not the world of doing. It's like you've got to find out what the nature of something is. And it turned out that in part it was that they wanted to be listened to, and ultimately what they created was a listening conference for women in Africa.
And so people could be heard.
So rather than kind of a colonial go in there, we know kind of thing. It was a go in there and meet them where they are and hear them, and then really connect at a level that was empowering on an ongoing basis. And then the women became so empowered that they started to really take on leadership locally. It's, in some ways, it is challenging to get at this and not think it's just conceptual, because we are speaking to being different than doing, and our world is really all about like the result part, not that who we are with part first and foremost.
I can see that certainly one of the importance and one of the things that did come out of the 60s here was to just be with each other and not necessarily have to be doing, like being in the park, like the whole human being was being in the park and hanging out and just appreciating life together. So there was a sense of being as well as doing, and then you maybe get inspirations for the do from the being, and then...
Well, it's a balance, yeah. You know, and it has been really out of balance.
Do-be-do-be-do.
But my being on the road is very much a process of, I have a strong intention. My intention is that people get how great they are at a level that allows them to really be creative in their lives. And to me, the Aquarian Age, and actually, I mean, think about the Aquarian Age. We've heard about it for I don't know how long. What does it mean? Aquarian principles are humanitarian principles having to do with who we are with one another. Like I bring my component, you bring yours, we bring those together. That's what the Aquarian Age means. Mm-hmm. So now we're in it energetically, and we're getting that we're nearly 7 billion people. We are clearly here together. What if there's something right about it? What level of creativity could we go to if we consistently moved through our day with a primary recognition that we're connected? Not that there's this thing called separation and this thing called connection we have to get
to. Well, yeah, that's the fundamental spiritual principle of seeing the perfection in each moment, that it actually is perfect and that there's nothing wrong with the now. You know, there's acceptance of what is, and in the process you can see how to evolve things.
So, I've actually looked at everything that we consider to be a major problem on the planet right now is actually a symptom of a core problem, and that core problem is the perception of separation.
Which is just a perception.
It's only a perception. Like, jump up. Where do you land? I mean, we literally are here together. It's crazy in a way that we orient to separation. Now, if you walked through every moment of your day and you were aware that I'm connected to this other person, I'm connected to this earth I walk on that feeds me and provides for me, I'm connected to my inner source. It's like if that were the primary opinions and explanations and all the places we go to would drop away, and we would literally be about this connection place. Mm. And that would give us access to the resources and to our true creativity.
That's the well of life.
It's like, to me, it's where everything's been moving us to. Mm-hmm. And we've got to get it, not just conceptually and not like in, you know, conversation, how cool, you know. And especially in California, as I've gone on this trip and I've been staying in San Diego, North County, and Ojai, Santa Barbara, now I'm up here, you know, the consciousness movement in so many ways is so great. And at the same time, we're first world privileged people, many of us, most of us. We don't get how much of our conversation is actually kind of an indulgence of our privilege, that there literally are people going to bed hungry and there are horrible things going on in the world that are totally solvable if we come together at this next level and really come from this affirmation of we're connected.
Hmm. Well, wasn't that something that like Est was trying to get rid of hunger in our lifetime? They said that if everyone focused on just one issue like hunger, that could be eliminated. I guess Bill Gates is taking his approach of eliminating malaria.
Yeah, but it's still kind of colonial, you know, what he's doing. It's like it's going to this. What about everybody being empowered right where they are to create what they see to create?
Right,
and if that's the new activism. And if we were to pull out of people that quiet thing that they may keep to themselves, but they actually know on a very deep level they came here for. Hmm. And then by coming together, it's entirely possible and brought alive, you know. So it's an attention redirect. But you ask, where does it play out? A couple of people that responded this most strongly to me on this are people that are doing on the ground work, and like this Sheikh from Senegal, who comes from a particular group called the Marid Brotherhood, and they've for 100 years been practicing this, come together, work together on the land. And the founder, Sheikh Abba Dibamba, 100 years ago, literally was like the Gandhi of Western Africa with these very principles. So I'm not talking about something that's like brand new. I'm talking about how important it is that it be reseated in the culture and be the primary and not like a conversation around the edges.
Mm-hmm. So what does that look like, Frankie Lee? Can, say, the people in this room even begin to understand it or begin to function that way? What would represent a concrete change in that direction?
Well, it's more a matter of looking at what you already care about and kind of hooking it up together. And like, look at California. California's got some serious water problems going on right now. It's got some serious money issues going on. We could look to government and try to get our parental figures to change things, or we could be in action locally, which is starting to happen. I mean, it's happening in beautiful ways, like permaculture and the transition town movement and things like that. But for a lot of people, it's not happening. It's not built into their lives. And I think a lot of sorrow and longing is really a factor of knowing on some level that, yeah, you can have a lot of stuff and you can indulge in a lot of cool things, but if people are suffering, you can't truly be completely happy. So if people start to live a life of contribution at the next level, and even things like, I went to a wonderful talk at the Academy Motion Pictures in Los Angeles, and it was some of the most leading-edge special effects people in games and films and what have you. But it was like they were taking all their creativity and they were putting it inside of these things. Like movies and games and all, which I think was kind of perfect for the last cycle. But in this cycle, what if we were to actually take that creativity and put it in the world and then utilize those mediums to serve how it's showing up. And I can't say that I've evolved this all the way, because the reason I'm on the road is to connect with people who want to play this game with me, if you will, of hooking things up at the next level. You know, but a lot of people have parallel dreams, but they're trying to enact them by themselves, and they're not really getting the value of shared resources, what other people have figured out. And yes, the internet has these things, and you can find them as information. But it's also possible to put it in play at this next level.
There is something about connecting in person to person, that is just the net, and phones just don't do it justice.
Yeah.
I think we were designed to connect in person, and that's the most effective way we know. And then the networks can then be utilized for continuing the conversation after we separate in physical space.
Yeah. And look, people are in transition right now, and they know that they can't rely on the way they've been doing things, even the most successful people, to be successful any longer. There's something indicated. Mm-hmm. And this is what I feel. So on a very practical level, I like to work with people that already recognize there's something that they want to bring about, or at least open to exploring it, and then have them identify who their sphere of influence is that they could be co-creating with, and then build on who's there and who's missing in the configuration that would balance things out in terms of the natural gift, conversation, and flow.
It does take teams.
Yeah, it's an orientation to a balanced co-creative, you know, space, and how do you create that?
So you see that as some of your skill set to see the
turn. Yeah, well, and what I have done, I've played big games in the world, and then I've put on the biggest event in New York with The Who for Quadrophenia, the movie. I've put on Academy Award campaigns. I've done that kind of thing. But I've also had this background in experiential learning and communications on the ground and sociology. So I've produced over 100 events that are all co-creative in nature, and we've explored these things. This is what we did across like the West Side in Los Angeles for the last 20 years.
What'd you call them?
I started with a women's group called A Circle of Women, and then in 96 I created the Art of Living Coalition. And so it was individuals coming together in circles, and then it was circles, like each person's individual community, whether it was men's groups, women's groups, environmental stuff, you know, whatever it happened to be, coming together. And different than sometimes we think we're together, but we're really just kind of next to each other. you know, like talking head panels and conferences and these kind of
Everyone's
things.
Everyone's actually in their own world.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. They are. Or they come to hear, like, this exalted person, and they get an information download, and they meet some people, and they think, oh, wow, how groovy. I've got, you know, I've come away with this new friend. But the next level, and so what we did is we combined things. Like, we did annual International Women's Day events, and then we combined well, one person took it on entirely to bring the band together. We did it in a space where they were part of it. It wasn't their event, like Agape Church. It was the first one in Los Angeles, 1999. A veil dancer and a poet, you know, they combined what they did. So the process was one of, you know, really melting into and weaving together what we had. And and that's the opportunity. I think it's actually quite practical. It's just a matter of you have to step into the experience. And we, again, we've been conditioned to have, like, neck-up education and business, and we're disassociated, and we're sitting in hardback chairs and stuff. So these were completely participatory events where everybody participates.
So it was, yeah, gotcha. Okay, I mean, it was more of a party in a sense, and that you had.
It was a co-creation.
Yeah, co-creation.
You know, we had people behind the scenes that did preparation for it to happen. We had the presenters, yes, but then we had very, very high-level participation on the part of the people.
Now, did you see these circles existing throughout America, around the world? You think everyone belongs to circles of influence, and that everybody is got their circle of friends, their circle of relatives that
and
they
it's a matter of how we relate
trust,
to it, yeah,
and how they connect with each other creates
I sat down with a gal who's does career counseling and internship programs at UCSB, and she was saying how challenging it is for interns to really get placed in proactive programs with smaller organizations, nonprofits, and things, because they have such high demanding financial, you know, things that they have to satisfy. And I shared with her that I'd come up with a delegate model which allowed somebody to be able to identify their sphere of influence and go to those people, which could be your neighborhood group, it could be all sorts of different things that you might not really, you know, assess and look at that way, and you could get supported and financed to then go to a nonprofit and work, but you could have some sort of agreement in place that allowed you to go and to come back and to feed it into the community. It's much more real. There's not the demarcation in the different parts of your life and stuff. And this was something I'd come up with when I co-led an event, like back in the late 90s, and I knew that the people who had the time didn't have the bucks, and the people who had the bucks didn't have the time. So what if they made it work for everybody? Mm-hmm. So, but people aren't looking that way. So they think, well, I didn't get the funding, I can't go. I can't, you know, I'm going to have to do the Fortune 500 gig instead.
Yeah, go with what you think is maybe more real. Well, after the break, I'd like to talk to you about the future.
Okay. Future now.
Yeah.
Did you know that one of the brightest people I know, pharmacist Ben Fuchs, now has his own one-hour call-in show, The Bright Side, live each weekday morning from 8 to 9 a.m. on your other favorite radio station, AM 1340 KOMY? It's true. For years, listeners from all over the country have lobbied for the highly energetic, charismatic, and brilliant pharmacist Ben to have his own talk show so anyone can interact with him and benefit from his vast knowledge of how the remarkable human body works. Ben believes that prescription drugs are toxic and should be used as a last resort, not first resort, to treat health challenges in the amazing perpetual healing machine, the human body. His show is engaging and inspiring, and he is a joy to listen to. Check it out for yourself. Listen to The Bright Side with pharmacist Ben Fuchs live each weekday from 8 to 9 a.m. on KOMY AM 1340, just before The Alex Jones Show. You're bound to get hooked.
It's time to celebrate. 90 years of local business. Hello, Michael Olson here, speaking up for Think Local First, County of Santa Cruz, with an invitation to join us for our Summer Mixer, Thursday 5 to 7:30, as we help our good friends at G.O.H. Wilson celebrate their 90th anniversary. See how fun 90 can be. Join us at G.O.H. Wilson's ultra-modern fabrication facility at 250 Harvey West Drive for a presentation of local business by historian Sandy Lydon. Music by Island Breeze. Drawings for prizes from local businesses, delicious foods and libations, and as always, lots of meeting and mixing with your friends and neighbors from the locally owned business community of Santa Cruz County. 90 is a great reason to celebrate, and as a member of the locally owned business community, you are invited to celebrate with Think Local First at GOH Wilson, Thursday, 5 to 7:30, 250 Harvey West in Santa Cruz. And hey, on the way to your 90th, please remember to think local first.
Hey everyone, you need to take a powder. Yes, Beyond Tangy Tangerine Powder to help you live a long and healthy life. Dr. Wallach says real health insurance is essential nutrients plus a truckload of antioxidants. Only one problem, it's just about impossible to get that from your diet alone. Thank goodness for Beyond Tangy Tangerine, the most complete multiple ever. Our unique crystal formula mixes instantly with water to make a delicious drink. Now listen to this. 130 vitamins, minerals, and other nutrients. 115 fruits and vegetables like acai and noni. Organic trace minerals as well. Beyond Tangy is extremely high in antioxidants to speed healing, slow aging, fight disease with no added sugar, artificial sweeteners, or preservatives. It's perfect for kids and diabetics. Mix your Beyond Tangy every morning and take it with you throughout the day. Take your powder on trip. So take it from me, Andy Anderson, and order your powder now. Call now, toll free, 888-245-0300. That's 888-245-0300.
Hi, I'm Tim from Tim's Auto Repair.
And this is Michelle from Full Metal Jacket Automotive.
Join us on KSCO every Wednesday evening at 7 p.m. for our show,
Driver's Seat. We talk about the Batmobile, Carroll Shelby, Mustangs, Chevys, anything that would make your gearheads spin. Hot rods, cool cars, or your daily driver. Join us every Wednesday from 7 to 8 o'clock on KSCO. You can be in the driver's seat.
Welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. We're talking to Frankie Lee Slater about the power of co-creation and methods of really amping up our co-creative capacities at this point in time.
And we have a caller from Los Angeles, which is Julius, and he is kind of interested in talking about one of the problems of the co or the lack of co, i.e. corporations. So let's, you ready to see what he has to say about that?
Sure.
Okay, let's see.
Hey,
hello,
Dr.
Julius.
Future.
Can you hear me?
Hey, can you hear us?
Yeah. Hey, so Dr. Future, you're a real doctor. I was looking at your website. Looks interesting.
Oh, good, good. I'm glad you enjoyed it. So you have any thoughts on the co-creator? Probably have any questions for our guests?
Yeah, it seems like, how do we get around the problem of the corporations? They're never going to allow us to create a perfect world unless we kill all the pigs, it seems to me.
Because they have their agenda and it's not ours, huh?
And they're willing to kill us to prevent us from keeping changing the world, making a perfect world, because they love it just the way it is, because
they got to protect their assets.
Right on.
Yeah, I see. What do you say, Frankie?
Well, it does actually come to this having a access to our own creativity and coming together, because like this Sheikh Abba Dibamba that I mentioned earlier, just as an example, I mean, there was colonialism and slavery that had preceded it in Western Africa, but he never went up against anything. He just brought the people together in a way that was very proactive and effective, and they produced results for themselves. So in a way, we've been inside of a kind of parental model where we've looked to authorities to take responsibility for us, and then we get pissed at them and we want to knock them off the pedestal. And in a way, the whole corporate world is kind of an enactment of that. So I find that it's a lot more effective to actually, you know, get in action with people and keep that consistent and make it the consistency than to even go there, because we, you know, it's clear that institutional forms are starting to break down. The internet has allowed us to be related beyond place. It's not as physical as we came to think that it was. So it's more about, like, every time you put the energy on a particular world, you, in a way, you participate in keeping it going. So it's like going in, and Alan, so, Dr. Future wanted to go to the future. You go to the future of what you really want to create, and you make that so primary.
I just think, though, if we could kill the pigs, take back our government, we could be so much more powerful at co-creating a perfect world.
Well, one of the things that one of my co-housemates at the last place that I stayed, and I'm not going to speak for him, but there are some really cool things coming out about very specific people who did very specific things that, but what's important about it is not the who's who so much as the understanding about how perception works, so that we can know when we're caught up in something that's not real and when we are truly being creative. And it will make the difference.
And also, I'd just like to say that I am an advocate of instant karma, i.e. the kind of energy that you pray for. If you would like that energy applied to yourself, then that's the solution that you can feel good about you're putting your energy into. But if you're coming up with a solution to, you know, create another victim from a problem because you are dissatisfied with the current situation, then you're not really solving the problem. In fact, you're fomenting a new problem. And if anything, you know, when you have people like Congresswoman Gifford getting shot because of people openly advocating taking people out and killing them, then, you know, in a certain sense, I think talk radio needs to take responsibility for advocating things like killing anyone. I think killing anyone is really not the kind of world that we want to be creating. We want a solutions-based focus, and we want a way.
So, if I understand what you're saying, that your guest is saying, is you're saying like we would all work together under slavery to the pigs, but somehow we create this perfect world and. In spite of being enslaved to the pigs?
No, you're putting words in my mouth. I'm saying that advocating killing is not an appropriate solution.
No, I'm talking about your guest. So it seemed like she was saying that we should work together to create a perfect world under slavery to the pigs.
Well, that's right? You putting words in my mouth.
Let Frankie answer.
Yeah, I would say that you're repeating that same thing over and over again is a pretty good example of habitual behavior. I mean, it's not actually working for you. You're not getting a response.
It seemed like my question was not understood. I'm just trying.
I understand your question, and I've spent, you know, 30 years breaking these things down so we can actually get at it. So I'm answering you in a way that I feel quite strongly would empower you if you are open to hearing it.
I thought I was talking to two different people. Maybe I misunderstood.
Yeah,
I'm sorry, but
that was Mrs.
I'm still
Future
not
giving
understanding. I'm still not understanding how you believe we can create a perfect world while we're still slaves to the pigs. Could you explain that, please?
Okay. It has to do with being conscious and understanding how to create. Because if you're at the impact of something, it's because you actually are just sort of partially in what I'm talking about. It's like things don't happen to us. They do happen in the world, but they're propagated by our being willing to be disempowered. So I'm with you in terms of being empowered, and I'm saying empowerment does not come from going up against things. It comes from being proactively creative about creating the world that you really want.
So you're saying, if I again, maybe I misunderstood, but are you saying we're responsible for the way the pigs are abusing us?
I'm saying we're responsible for our unconsciousness that allows things to go forward until we become conscious enough to really be creative.
Yeah, we're responsible for our actions too. Things happening to us, and we can we can play with our actions.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
So, yeah, you know, I think that it's really hard to explain to someone how there's a difference between acknowledging the current situation and addressing it factually versus coming up with a solution that makes a lot of assumptions about how to address the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we're being baited to embrace a whole worldview of accepting that we are enslaved by pigs and that the only way out is killing them. And, you know, that kind of self-expression is one that does nothing to make the world a place that people don't feel enslaved or victimized by a system that is serving people that they're not part of, you know?
Well, you know, we all got messages somewhere along the line that we weren't creative in some part of our lives, and pretty much generally, because even creativity as it's held in our society is sort of sanctioned into the performing the fine arts and things. But if we really get that to be human is to be creative, and we're creating whether we do it consciously or not, then it becomes our personal responsibility to, you know, be as aware as we can and be very watchful when we start to go on automatic. Now, the best way I've found for that is to be in good company. Because to be able to hold ourselves up to being conscious on a regular basis when there is a bunch of, you know, stuff flying around in the world that's just going to distract us, takes something. And it takes a skill of co-creating. It takes a skill of coming together at the next level. It takes a skill of being aware when we're just in our heads having opinions about stuff and when we're actually, you know, connected and involved. Now, where people are taking, like when I was in South Africa, almost everybody I met was actively involved in contributing somewhere in the society. But where things could have gone much further was if they had been really sharing resources and communicating and working together across disciplines. And that's an orientation that we haven't had. Like, if you look at recovery in Haiti, for instance, you know, it's easy for Anderson Cooper to get out there and say, well, I don't understand how the NGOs aren't working together. 6 months later, you'd think they would. Well, they didn't in the past. It's not what they understand how to do. You've got to bring it. So when people see something that can bring value, it becomes their responsibility. And that's where creativity starts to take off at a whole other level.
Hmm. You know, it reminds me of a very famous quote, and I like to send a free Dr. Future magnet to anyone who can answer. Who said this? Quote, there are those that look at things the way they are and ask why. I dream of things that never were and ask why not.
Yes.
Yeah. So who said that? 479-1080. Now, I do think that the place of creation, where you're talking, where you come from, you see you come from a place where you've solved the problem already, so you can work backward from that to see how to solve it. So when you're creating a solution to mm-hmm. something, it's a creative space that is beyond the conditions that you're in now.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. It reminds me of another quote from Einstein that talked about how problems cannot be solved from the same paradigm in which they were formed.
That's exactly the meaning of that quote. That's actually what it means. It's like, so if we go up against, you know, government or, you know, religion or something, you know, we're just keeping that, the downside of that stuff going, you know, so you go beyond that. I've oriented to being a global citizen for as long as I can remember.
So you see yourself as more than an American at this point?
I'm an American. I'm a woman. I'm 6'1". I'm a bunch of things, you know.
Right.
But I don't overly identify with any of it. It's, you know, it's part of uh-huh. a multiplex, you know, tapestry that I am and how uh-huh. great.
So what does a global citizen do? How is it different from being a country citizen?
Well, for me, it's about reveling in the fact that we're all here together. I mean, imagine like the strengths of an individual and another individual, and then you multiply that to whole, you know, cultures and nations and ways of being and things that we've brought forth.
It's a slippery slope, though. Once you embrace other nations, I mean, you...
Would you like another opinion on this? We have Alex in Santa Cruz on the phone.
Sure.
In our last 5 minutes here.
All right. Well, once you embrace other cultures as part of your identity, mm-hmm. in a sense, then that means no enemy, ultimately. I mean, we just follow it through logic.
Gosh, what would we do with all that free time?
No us versus them? What are you talking about? No duality?
Oh. And we're a lot more blended than we, think that we are, too.
Already.
I mean, this has been going on
for a long time.
We're
already pretty mixed as it is. Yeah. Huh? We're all mutts on this planet. Okay, who do you got on the line?
Alex.
Hey,
in Santa Cruz. What do you think?
Oh, man, I think this is so awesome. It feels like someone just threw a pie in my face with knowledge.
Oh, nice, Alex.
It tastes really good, but at the same time, I listen to Alex Jones sometimes, and I listen to your guys' radio station a lot.
Uh-huh.
At what point do you draw the line? I mean, addressing things that you reject, like this whole thing with Bin Laden or the whole thing with the wars and stuff,
mm-hmm.
I appreciate your input on, actually creating solutions and putting your energy towards that. But what about addressing people around you and the consciousness of people around you and their, I don't know if it's an inability or, just the ignorance and the fact of ignoring, what we ought to be true. Like, how do you find that happy medium between addressing things that you know in your life not to be true or in your society or your community, but at the same time, positive change?
That's a great question, Alex. You mean sort of deciding what you need to prioritize and give your energy to and what you should ignore because it's not really yours to deal with. Is that right?
But at the same time, having that universal feeling of, altruism with all of the people on the planet and, seeing that connection that we have, but trying to address these, gaps in consciousness or the contradictions in our consciousness. And
Yes, for
in
me.
1 minute or less.
I'll be real quick, then I'll give it to our guests. I'd say cultivating compassion, emotion, compassion and empathy. Empathy and being a good listener, becoming a really good listener will help guide your decisions to how to react to people. Because sometimes when you're listening well, you can see, well, that's just another part of you, or that's where you were 20 years ago, that sort of thing. You'll have more of an insight as to, rather than just a reaction to someone. And go ahead, Frankie.
It very much like that, just being able to enter the other person's world and get where they're coming from, because we are that related, and nothing happens in isolation. So, we see the Middle East as it's an over there, but we've been, doing stuff over to them, and they've been doing stuff to us for a good long time. So, if you start on a personal level, you can build out from it.
Yeah, and, work with your own personal relationships.
And like in spiral dynamics, they've proven that as you become more of a resonant field, you can impact that many more people. The more centered and together you can possibly be and grow it out from where you can take action right away, you will reach it, and we will all weave together.
Well, right on. Thank you guys so much.
Yeah, thanks, Alex, for your call.
Yeah, thanks for your call. So another fun show.
Are we going to share, how they can connect with me?
Yeah, we're going to give you the address.
15 seconds,
FrankieLeeSlater.com, FrankieLeeSlater, if you're interested in her ideas. You can check it out. Phone
and
number.
Circles Uniting is my main thing, so
Circles
if you do, go to YouTube.
Everybody, bye-bye.
So, bye-bye. Thanks for calling.
Before you know it, you're there. Living in the future in a plastic dome sounds mighty strange, I agree. But now I call it home, sweet home, that's where I long to be, yeah. Living in the future in a plastic dome sounds mighty strange, I agree. But now I call it home, sweet home, that's where I long to be. Now if you're hungry for food or drink, just go to the teller machine.